Welcome to MoneyWeb Now. Business news every morning.
It's Tuesday, 2nd of August. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb studios in Houghton, Johannesburg. On the show today, chatting with Pierre Radenhuis. I want to touch some Nasdaq, up 15% since those June lows, and Brent, which is under pressure, currently under 100. Chatting with Kevin Lings, Chief Economist at Stanlib, base effect and how that will bring down inflation over the next year. And then Justin Schmidt from ABSA, PMI data, lowest level since the July 2021 riots, but there's some in points there around inflation and also around inventories that I particularly want to dig into. The show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Morning headlines for MoneyWeb: SA suspends anti-dumping duties on poultry imports. This allows for a year of, theory being, cheaper chicken in an effort to assist cash-strapped consumers. At Business Day, Game opens biggest bottle store as retailers turn to booze. Biggest for them, not biggest ever. And this is they start to try and get their game back into profit. It hasn't made money in a number of years. Alcohol? Yeah, that's probably it, eh? Morning market fears was red. S&P down almost a third of a percent. Nasdaq a couple of points down, 0.06%. Asia's red. Sydney off a third. Tokyo down 1.6%. Commodities mostly green overnight. Gold, $1,791 an ounce. Brent, the red, which is $98.99 a barrel. Platinum, $903, and palladium, $2,205 an ounce. Rand, $16.54. Top 40 opening call, looking for about 620 points to the red. That's 1% down. That, as Tencent trades off just over 3% in the Hong Kong lunch break.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Pierre Radenhuis from Herenia Capital Advisors. Pierre, appreciate the early morning. Nasdaq and Brent, and I'm talking my book here picking your brain, because I have longs on both. The Nasdaq's been a fairly spectacular run. It's up over 15% since the mid-June. Now, the one thing experience has taught me is that face-ripping rallies can happen in bear markets. What are we seeing here? We've seen some good numbers out, but it just looks overdone.
Yeah, well, good morning, firstly. And I think that, I guess I should open by saying that it is tough being a bear sometimes. Wow.
Yeah.
The market has rallied very, very strongly in the Nasdaq as well. And we actually saw, I think we spoke earlier this, or well, it's now a new month, I guess,
last month.
About, you know, essentially earnings season is going to dictate the pace for the second half of the year. And actually what we saw from some of these tech companies is earnings surprises on the upside. That they actually, you know, did relatively well. And that is reflected in how the Nasdaq has traded. Whether or not that has now, I guess, run out of momentum is still to be seen. My personal view is still, relatively unchanged, in the sense that I think that what we've just saw was a bear market rally, and we are probably nearing a tipping point where we continue a downtrend. But, you know, I guess time will have to tell. I mean, the Nasdaq has rallied, as you mentioned, very, very strongly over the last 2 months. I guess we'll have to wait and see whether or not this is sustainable, right?
Yeah, and it is. I mean, and that's the one key, which I've took me a long time to learn it, but you can get absolute massive rallies in bear markets. We had a 16% rally back in late March into Easter, and we're basically doing the same again. And of course, after that, it did collapse. Turning quickly to oil, I note Brent back below $100, kind of sitting on what is a bit of support. I know we've chatted before, and you're saying that a move down to the low 90s is very possible, and certainly we seem to be perhaps on track for that. It keeps coming back to that sub 100.
Yeah, so this is, I guess, where the bearishness on things like the Nasdaq and the S&P, you know, come from, essentially. If we look at the way oil has traded, I mean, it's done obviously very well post 2020. But it's starting to look as if it's pricing in, you know, a recession. There's other markers of that as well, particularly sort of, US treasuries and that type of stuff. But particularly oil, you know, is really coming under quite a bit of pressure as this expectation of lower demand and lower and slower economic activity puts pressure on it, right? So that's one of the things that unfortunately is inescapable. Even though structurally the market is short of energy, there's a shortage of energy, we put it that way, you know, it makes a lot of sort of sense for energy prices to go higher. And it probably, you know, will still over the next year or so. But in the shorter term, as the market is grappling with the idea of, you know, are we going to have a proper recession, yes or no? I mean, technically, we already are in a proper recession, right? How much worse it gets from here, how much higher interest rates goes, how much more economic activity slows, all those fears are starting to sort of show up in the oil price. And if we saw, you know, what if we look at the home sales, for example, in China, that dropped something like 40%. Okay, for two reasons. One, you know, home buyers are refusing to pay for homes as construction companies are not building during a cash flow crunch. But that's obviously just going to sort of add fuel to the fire, right?
Yeah. No, it does. And I saw a great report. Some of the construction companies in China were letting people pay with garlic or other sort of products, which was a little wild. I believe that they're Petri Wittenhouse, Herenia Capital. And that's our question today on LinkedIn and Twitter. That 15% run in the NASDAQ, I mean, is this a bear market rally, or have we bottomed? You can have your vote. You can have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter.
Hear that? Nothing. Your money can do more when it blocks out the noise, as hard as it is these days. When you invest in the Stanlib Balanced Cautious Fund, we manage the risks so that you can see stable inflation-beating returns through market cycles. Invest with more certainty at stanlib.com/more. Stanlib is an authorized financial services provider and a registered manager.
MoneyWeb now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Jenny and I with Justin Schmidt from ABSA. We had the ABSA PMI out yesterday. I mean, overall, we're back to the levels from a year ago, when, of course, we had the riots in KZN and a little bit in up here in Gauteng. Justin, appreciate the early morning time. A couple of points that I want to touch on. The one that really struck me was inventories. And I saw that, again, quite elevated. And all the CEOs I've been chatting to this year, a common theme has been, yep, supply chains, we've been building up inventories. And that shows in the PMI data. My question is, I mean, there's a concern here that particularly as we have a slow economy, I suppose we could say, what it means is that they've got inventories, which means that their production and their manufacturing demand is going to potentially be lower. Or am I overreading that data point?
Yes, Simon, morning. It's a bit of the opposite case of what we've generally been speaking about over the last year and a half, where there's a shortage and we worry that they're not going to produce enough to meet that demand. I think this story this month is kind of a persistent issue that we've been seeing, where demand is actually dropping. New sales orders, business activity have both been below 50. So what that's meaning is, you know, when we look at output, when we look at the orders coming in, this is slowing versus the inventory that's going up. So I agree with you that they're stocking up, and it's a bit of a change in what we've been looking at, where there's going to be more stock on the floor. At least they won't miss the forward-looking sales. But the problem is that at the moment, output is dropping.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I mean, they won't miss the sales. But the trick is, and you mentioned their business activity, new sales orders. I mean, even exports. I mean, all of them are lower. All of them are saying, you know, weak domestic activity, weak demand sitting within our economy. And I suppose in many senses, that shouldn't be a surprise.
Yeah, so it shouldn't be a surprise. I mean, when we look at the PMI, this has been dropping from May, June, and it was finally below the 50 mark, which, like you said, is the first time since the July unrest last year that it's been below 50. But if you look at all the figures underlying it, it's the cost of oil that's increased the cost of production. It's these supply chain shocks. But I think most importantly, and the crisis that really needs to be addressed is the Eskom load shedding. In this month of July, we had 22 days of load shedding, and we had the highest intensity. So I don't know. You can't plan for stage six. Manufacturers have been telling us that level one and level two, stage one and two, they can plan around that. As soon as you go above two, that's going to hit output. So I think all of that is weighing on them.
Yeah, I don't know how a manufacturer literally survives in an environment of load shedding, as you say, stage six, where we're losing, 8 hours a day. The other point that I pondered on, and then it occurred, so we saw the slowest pace of cost increases since the beginning of the year. And that's like, oh, great. Maybe we're seeing some inflation coming down. But then I read into the weeds around it, and it's like, yeah, it's coming down, but it still is high compared to the long-term history of this. I mean, the short answer is, notwithstanding weak economic activity there and load shedding, cost pressures do remain. You mentioned oil a moment ago. It might be below 100 this morning, but even 100 is an elevated level.
Yeah, so I'm probably the wrong person to ask about CPI, because I guessed it would peak at about 6.5. But like you say, there's good news there that it has slowed or reduced. But when you look historically, producer prices in this index are still historically high. So I think we've got those high costs sitting with us for longer. I don't see this moving out of the system for the next few months.
A quick last question. The Toyota plant has been shut since April because of the floods down in Durban. I am suspecting that, notwithstanding they are important, they're not big enough on their own to sort of impact something like a PMI, which is so broad as an index.
Yeah, so it is. I think where you do see is when we talk about the survey and we look at different subsectors. Here we're looking at the entire manufacturing sector. So it is an important subsector, but it's a component of the 10 subsectors that we have in the manufacturing sector. So I think it's just another pain point. But more broadly, the big impact here is load shedding.
Yeah, the big impact is load shedding, as you say. And July was a horror month of load shedding. Justin Smith from APSA, as always, appreciate the early morning insights.
There's no postponing the inevitable. Your money knew this day would come. And you know what? It can hardly wait to start giving some back to you. When you invest in Stanlib's fixed income funds, you can retire earning a regular income off your investments. Invest for more certainty at stanlib.com/more. Stanlib is an authorized financial services provider and a registered manager.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting with Kevin Lengs, Standard's chief economist. Kevin, appreciate the time today. Talking base effect and inflation and delving into it a bit. I suppose first question, what are these base effects and how are they going to impact and have been impacting local and global inflation over the next year?
Simon, yeah, so the base effects are going to have an enormous impact on inflation. And let me just quickly explain where this is going to come through. And it's mostly related to the fuel price.
Mm-hmm.
So if you think that, so let's get simple about it. Let's say the oil price is $100 a barrel. And then in 12 months' time, it's still $100 a barrel. The percentage change from 1 year to the next is exactly 0%.
Yeah.
Even though the oil price is actually fairly high at $100, the rate of increase is zero. Now, when you look at inflation in South Africa's, you look at oil in South Africa's inflation, it's incredibly high. The fuel price at the moment, that inflation rate is sitting at about 50%. And when you look internationally, it's the same thing. I was looking at U.S. gasoline prices. Year on year, their number is 50%. But if the oil price stays exactly where it is and therefore gasoline and the petrol price more or less stays where it is, you're going to have this enormous rollover of fuel inflation, not just in South Africa, but I guess around the world. And immediately we can see we've got a petrol price reduction that should come through next month. And that could set us up for a very nice fall in key category of inflation. And so you can go from 50% year on year for your fuel price down to zero quite quickly, and that will obviously help to bring the overall rate of inflation down very substantially during the course of next year.
Yeah, so that does mean, I mean, certainly, I would imagine by the middle of next year into the second half, that would then suggest that, in fact, inflation should be coming down quite swiftly and back into sort of the sort of brought under control, I suppose, is the phrase.
Yes, so we've got an inflation forecast for the end of next year at about 4.6%, which is very close to the midpoint of the inflation target. So yes, inflation at the moment is sitting at over 7%, and it's going to remain high. It's going to remain over 7% over the next few months. But let's say that by the end of next year, inflation is more like 4.6, then what is the Reserve Bank going to be thinking around interest rates? They're going to be thinking, well, we've done our job. Inflation's coming down. We can now start to discuss a cut in interest rates as we get closer to the end of next year.
And the flip to that question, though, is why then be raising now if there's a very likelihood, very high likelihood, that base effect will just sort of automatically take inflation down during the course of 2023?
Yeah, so that's critical, Simon, because obviously this base effect is powerful, but the risk in the meantime is that other areas of inflation start to pick up and they take over. Okay, and so that you find that, yes, the rate of increase in oil and the rate of increase in petrol inflation is moderating, but perhaps wages are going up and clothing inflation and entertainment inflation and a whole range of other categories are now taking over because inflation has been allowed to take hold. So what central banks, including the Reserve Bank, is trying to do is push up interest rates so that those, what we call second round effects, so those knock-on effects don't start to manifest and therefore take on a life of its own. And that, yes, you are left with a high petrol price in the short term, and there's nothing the Reserve Bank can do about petrol inflation, but it will slow naturally due to this base effect. And so you then have the benefit that next year inflation comes down. It's all about ensuring that inflation doesn't broaden out into many more categories and therefore become a lot more problematic.
Yeah, I take your point on that. But and therefore, I mean, all things being equal and assuming that what the central banks the world over with rising rates have been doing this year is working, they should imagine they're going to start talking rate decreases perhaps by as soon as middle of next year. Or is that overly optimistic?
No, I don't think it's over-optimistic. You can see that central banks are so-called front-loading the interest rate hikes. They're trying to get them up to do the job as quickly as possible. We saw that recently from the Federal Reserve. Mm-hmm. We've seen that from the South African Reserve Bank. I don't think they'll necessarily keep going at that 75 basis point hike, but you're going to see further hikes during the remainder of this year. And then early next year, I think you're going to be at an interest rate that most central banks are comfortable that is high enough in order to do the job they need mm-hmm. interest rates to do. So if that starts to then work, the base effects, inflation's coming down, the interest rate is working on dampening down the spread of inflation, then you're right. By the middle of next year, the discussion is going to be when do central banks start to cut rates, because by then inflation should have moderated substantially. Of course, that's going to depend on how central banks want to ensure that inflation is firmly inside the target and they don't want to give up on their inflation fighting credentials. So they'll probably be quite conservative. They're going to want to make doubly sure they've got it under control. But from a financial market perspective, that will be the interesting component, because there's no doubt financial markets are really going to enjoy once we see inflation roll over and once we realize this is the worst it's going to get in terms of interest rates.
Yeah, and of course markets are forward-looking, so they're going to start reacting to that long before it starts to happen. We'll leave it there. Kevin Liggs, Stanlib's Chief Economist, appreciate the time. That's it for today. We were chatting with Alex Dacey yesterday about two of those high-flying stocks, EOH and Ellie's. It's a decade ago, those were highly loved shares, and they have badly fallen back to earth. And the question we asked is, do you think they will recover their former glory? Almost two-thirds of you are saying, nope, you don't believe it at all. About 15% each said, yep, and picked either Ellie's or EOH, with a small percentage of you saying, actually, you have faith in both of them, which is, well, I suppose faith there is the operative word. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. The show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. We're live every weekday morning. The MoneyWeb website's in the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nabokhle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their early morning. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow. We're talking NASDAQ earnings.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.